are one shy of quorum at the moment. I know that getting here, if you were coming from downtown, was a real challenge because of the accidents and construction on the 427. So we do have a few people who've indicated that they are coming, but haven't quite made it yet. In the interests of your time and the ones who managed to make it here, why don't we get started? And we just won't be able to have any votes until we have a quorum. Good afternoon. I think everyone here knows me, but just in case, Lori McKee, I'm the Director of Public Affairs and Stakeholder Relations for Toronto Pearson. So our first order of business is to do a quick roll call. Vaughn, you want to do that?
Sure. So from Peel Region, Sevier. And Brampton Board of Trade. There you go. Councillor Dillon is supposed to be attending, so we'll see if he arrives in a little bit. From Halton, John Davidson. And from ACTA, Heather. Oh, Heather is not here yet, but she is supposed to be attending. Stephen Tufts on behalf of the Toronto Airport Workers Council. I believe he will not be attending. Oh, okay. Councillor Ford sends his regrets, I believe, also because of the parking lot in the 427. Mississauga Board of Trade, Jan Nevins. Toronto Region Board of Trade, Aileen Lucy. York Region, Jonathan Weedle, I believe, is going to be attending as well, but perhaps he's stuck in traffic. Shima Vanna on behalf of Councillor Krasnaji. Durham Region, Kathy Weiss. Councillor Parrish sends her regrets. On behalf of City of Toronto, Shane Raymond. Stephen Rose, I believe, will not be attending. Anton Norbert also cannot attend. Savick. He cannot attend. So Harold Drummond on behalf of City of Mississauga is not attending. Ludovic D'Souza from Transport Canada is right there.
And Jonathan is here. We have quorum.
Yeah.
Yay. Thank you.
Of City of Toronto, Danette Dalton. Tourism Toronto, Sarah Jarvis, I do not believe is attending. Dave Parko from NAV Canada, hello. Paul Steckham from MTO. Massimo Bergamini from the National Airlines Council. And Caroline Pograbia, on behalf of the Ministry of Tourism, will not be attending. So now with Jonathan here, we do have quorum.
Great. So the agenda was set out in advance. Any changes to today's agenda? All right, I have a motion to approve the agenda. Jonathan, I'll make you work. Seconded. Sevier? Any changes or opposition? All right, we'll carry on. The minutes as well were sent out for the last meeting. Any omissions or errors in the minutes that were circulated? There was no business arising from the previous minutes, so I'll have a motion to approve the minutes for March 27th, please. Jan Nevis the first, seconded by Badar. Thank you. If I stare you down, you'll say so. All those in favor? Opposed? That carries. Thank you. So that takes us to, if I can get to my agenda. We have our regular items, which starts with our consultative committee update, and that was circulated as well with the agenda for today, and I'll just ask Siobhan if she can walk through the highlights from that.
Right. So we sent the consultative committee update via an email newsletter for the first time. We're doing that because it allows for better readability on mobile devices. And it also helps us to understand which articles are most of interest to you. It shows us click-through rates and things like that. So ultimately, we think it will improve the experience. We can also embed videos as well. But we welcome your feedback on the new format that we're going to be sending that out. So some of the highlights are from Q1, we saw 7.7% growth in international traffic. That includes transborder to the U.S. We saw growth of about 3.6% in the domestic sector. So strong growth. Also, aircraft movements are up. However, they are growing at a slower rate than we've seen historically, and that is, of course, due to upgauging, so larger, fuller aircraft taking off and landing at Pearson. We launched an advertising campaign, which we titled The Better We Move, which is focused on growing support for better transit connectivity in the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area. And so that was launched in April. You'll see that we did some ad buys in magazines. We're also going to be on the side of some buses in the area as well. So you may have seen that, or if not, you can also go to torontopearson.com/betterwemove to see some information on that. We also published our annual report in May, which was also titled The Better We Move, in line with the advertising campaign. And you can find that on our website. We provided the link to that. This committee is aware. We shared the information the day that we announced the agreement with Metrolinx. So we are now formally working together with Metrolinx in cooperation with them to look at studying the various different lines that could connect into Pearson's Regional Transit and Passenger Center. And actually today we had a meeting where we had the various different groups come together, and it was a very productive meeting. We had Transport Canada, MTO, Metrolinx, as well as representatives from the GTAA to begin looking at what are the different studies and how are we going to work together to start refining what those plans look like. So we will keep you informed on that work as it progresses. In March, our master plan was approved. So the next time we will be publishing a, just feel like punishment pulling it together. But in 2027, will be the next, master plan. But so you can read, the master plan on our website. We provided the link in there as well. We touched on an initiative that's being spearheaded by YVR Airport in Vancouver. So we are part of a steering committee that's going to be working together to publish a new white paper this summer that is looking at how we can improve the flow between the U.S. and Canadian border. And there's going to be a special focus on emerging technologies as well. So we'll be happy to share that white paper with the committee when it is published later this summer. We touched on as well a media story about Canada Border Services Agency resourcing throughout the summer. Some of you might have seen the article in, I believe it was the Globe and Mail, just highlighting that there could be some challenges this summer at Pearson because resources for CBSA could be needed elsewhere. We are working very closely with CBSA so to make sure that they have adequate staffing levels, and we're also looking at how we can leverage technology as well to make sure we are able to ensure the consistent flow for arriving passengers. And then we just had we had an item on new routes and services. We have two new carriers, Primera Air and Ukraine International Airlines, as well as a number of new routes and a number of new summer routes that are going to be operating seasonally as well. Lastly, the Community Noise and Impacts Report. There weren't any, major jumps in complaints aside from York Region. Complaints from quarter over quarter decreased quite significantly from 600 to about 400. And then in Toronto, we saw a big uptick in complaints from 6,000 to about 15,000 complaints. However, the number of complainers or callers actually have decreased. So that means we're seeing more submitted complaints by fewer people. So that's what that number means there.
Thank you, Siobhan. Any questions for Siobhan?
Were the complaints from the one guy who complains like 10,000 times or?
We don't have specific
call display.
Yeah.
I think it's something in the magnitude of like the top five callers represent something in the magnitude of 3%. So there
that could deviate statistics.
It does for sure. That said, you know, we have to manage every complaint, and every complaint is researched and tracked back against an individual flight. It's a significant amount of work for a community relations team to do that, but that's why we do report the stats in the two ways, so that you can try and see callers versus complaints to try and, you know, play that forward in your own mind. On the initiative around preclearance and the border issues at YVR, just a clarification, the date for the issuance of that paper has been pushed a little bit. It's since September that it's going to be released, so I think September 10th is their working date right now. There actually was a meeting this morning in Ottawa with the Public Policy Forum, and they started to talk about some of the technology opportunities for border crossing. The Toronto Region of Border Trade is going to be hosting an event June 18th, and we'll be attending that, and that's going to talk more about border issues as well, but really focusing on trade and tourism issues. So I think over the course of the summer and leading up to the fall, this group of airports, airlines, WestJet and Air Canada are both part of the steering committee as well, and a number of businesses are going to be hosting opportunities to get more information that's going to then be fed into this paper that's produced at the end of the day, which will be produced in September. So if there are no questions, we'll move on to our first presentation this morning. And I'm really pleased, Massimo, that you were able to join us. And I guess I need to apologize, because it is not hard to join these meetings, or not easy to join these meetings by phone. The room just isn't set up to do that. It's something we probably need to make a bit of an investment in to do a better job. So I'm glad you're able to make it today. Thank you very much. Massimo joined the committee to represent the airline voice, and he comes from the National Airline Council of Canada. I'll let you introduce yourself more formally, but you're on the agenda today to talk to us about some of the initiatives and work that you're focusing your attention on behalf of your members.
Hey. Did you want to come up here? Fine from there? Okay.
Now? Yes. Excellent. Okay. So thank you very much. And I've had, you know, the pleasure of joining you in a couple of the meetings, although I struggled a little bit to follow what was being said. I think you will see more of me here physically. I think it'll make it a little bit easier to participate and contribute. But today I just wanted to share with you, a slightly different approach to advocacy and government relations that our organization is going to try out. Let me tell you to start a little bit about myself and sort of my background and how I get to where I'm going around this. I've worked in government relations and advocacy for close to 30 years, most notably in the municipal sector from 2000 to 2006 with the Federation of Canadian Municipalities. And at that time, in 2002, we were just Jack Layton had been president of the FCM, and he had, in his term as president, had begun to place the urban agenda, particularly the issues around housing and homelessness, on the national scene. It became quite clear, however, that, you know, once Jack left the Federation and took on a new challenge with the NDP, that his personal brand of energy and drive and capacity to frame an issue and to push an agenda was lacking, and we understood that really the approach that the organization and the municipal sector had been following for a year, a little over a year, was really quite idiosyncratic and built around a personality, a very strong personality with a very strong agenda. There were real institutional obstacles to that agenda, not the least of which the federal provincial framework that that had been colored by the failed attempt in the 1970s to create a federal urban affairs department, that had really soured federal-provincial relations. So there was a real reticence in Ottawa to embrace an urban agenda as part of a federal mandate. So as a group, we had to figure out, how do we change that paradigm? Because that's what really it was about. It was about a paradigm change. The opportunity was presented to us in June of 2002 when then Minister of Finance Paul Martin, you may recall, some of you, gave a speech at the Federation of Canadian Municipalities conference in Hamilton where he talked about a new deal for cities. 24, 48 hours later, he was fired from cabinet and the rest is history. What that did, however, that speech, which was very, very deliberate and very, very calculated, created a space for the municipal sector. It created a notional brand, this New Deal. I can tell you, for having parsed that speech, it wasn't a lot of substance to it, but it captured the imagination. So as a sector, the municipal sector, for the next 4 years, basically built what was a fairly flimsy brand, gave it form, gave it policy form, and most importantly, gave it a narrative, gave it a story that resonated right across the country, across various groups. And using that story, the municipal sector was able to engage with community groups, with business groups right across the country, not to mention, of course, the communities themselves, the municipal governments themselves. Over a course of 4 years, we went that really had a problem, federal provincial institutional environment that had a problem embracing the notion of a larger municipal role in the national scene to one that embraced it and that in fact, as we've seen now, that resulted in transformative investments, transformative institutional arrangements and so on. So I say this because, there are times where very, very valid policy agendas, very valid social agendas, very valid economic agendas, very valid corporate agendas, just fail to advance because the dominant paradigm just has no room for them. And what I'd like to suggest to you is that it is in that kind of space that the municipal sector finds itself today. A little bit about ourselves. I think you know about our organization. We represent the four largest carriers. Our members fly over 92% domestic flights in Canada and over 65% of international flights, 243 destinations, 64 countries around the world. Our members employ almost 50,000 Canadians across the country. Now, those are pretty impressive numbers when you juxtapose those numbers with the numbers and the weight and role of Canada's airports and the broader aerospace sector, you'd think that there would be considerable clout and in this group, this community. But in fact, that clout is not, which should be there, is not apparent when it comes to moving a political agenda forward. One of the reasons I suggest is that for too long, our sector has been operating within the sort of the policy or political framework called the lead accommodation. I mean, basically, it involves developing relations, negotiating, engaging in quiet diplomacy at the elite level. And finding accommodation between competing and agendas in that kind of environment. That may have been fine in the 1950s, 1960s, 70s, and 80s. The world today is much more complex. Information travels much more quickly. pressures are much more, are much greater, more urgent. The reality is a much more dynamic thing. The media environment has changed dramatically, changing the nature of political demands. And so if you want to advance an aggressive transformative agenda, then maybe that approach is no longer valid. So what we're suggesting is that something that I frame disruptive advocacy, in other words, an approach to advocacy and government relation that seeks to bring about change in dominance policy paradigms by challenging their foundations and increasing the political cost of maintaining the status quo. For us, the dominant paradigm, and I'm speaking about my members, is the user pay paradigm. And it's well understood. And certainly the Emerson report, I think, is one of the most comprehensive analysis and the most clear-eyed representations of the issues. And unfortunately, it really failed to get much traction. What it means for us, as a result of narrow airline profit margins, incremental costs such as third-party fees, charges, and taxes are transferred in whole and part to passengers. That means it has a dampening effect on demand, and of course it limits the capacity to grow profits on the part of the carriers. Cost of air travel in Canada relative to other jurisdictions is therefore higher than in those that subsidize air transport infrastructure such as the United States. When coupled with the high price sensitivity of demand, which is one of the realities of our sector, and geographically dispersed population, Canada's user pay system acts as a drag on our industry's competitiveness, penalizes residents of smaller regional remote markets, results in commercial and emissions leakage, and this is very important in the context of the carbon tax, discussion on carbon tax, and has a built-in unsustainable cost compounding bias. And when I say this, I'm thinking specifically of the aviation ecosystem and airports. You know, when we look at the impact of higher aviation fuel taxes on transborder leakage, when we look at the impact this has on the competitiveness of Canadian airports, reduction in traffic, Canadian airports reduces their revenues, which in turn require the airports to find other sources of revenue, which is why I say there's a built-in and unsustainable cost compounding bias in this system that must be addressed. So for us, it is absolutely a fundamental and some would say even existential challenge. So how did we get here? So, you know, until their transfer in 1990s, Transport Canada owned and operated most airports. But Canada's spiraling public debt made the status quo fiscally and politically unacceptable. I can tell you that I was actually, I had the honor and the pleasure of serving in the first Chrétien government from 1994 to 1997. And so I was there. I was working for a couple of cabinet ministers who were, one in particular, right in the crosshair of some of these cuts. So I got to live this and some of the debates from within. And some of you may recall the program review and that within which was a sort of a major slimming exercise within the government of Canada, but also more importantly the real transformation of the nature of the government of Canada with respect to transfers to people, individuals, and to other governments. We saw at that time the elimination of a number of transportation subsidies that had been seen as sacred cows, the crow's nest rate, for instance, or the feed freight assistance program, which in Atlantic Canada really sustained a certain type of agricultural undertaking. All of those were done away with primarily because of fiscal considerations. And it really is then, I believe, that we saw a shift in policymaking in Canada away from the line departments
to the central agencies and primarily to Finance Canada. And that is a significant paradigm change that affects our how we deal with these issues. So as I say, it was a culmination of a change in a decision-making paradigm, a shift of the political fulcrum from line departments to central agencies, and arguably, under Paul Martin, finance was second only to the Prime Minister's office in terms of overall agenda setting. And I can tell you that that trend continued under the Harper government and continues today. And we saw that and we see that on a daily basis when we engage, for instance, on what should absolutely be Transport Canada lead files. We're talking about, for instance, airport governance or model, business model and governance model for CATSA. And the sense we have is that there are some pretty fundamental discussions that take place on this at finance. And that ultimately the driver will be financial in nature. So what does this mean? And from my perspective, it means of the over years, this has resulted in a weakening of agenda setting capacity of Transport Canada, and this is true of all line departments. A weakening of open consultative policy development processes. And I, just as to illustrate, I would like to contrast the type of discussion that took place in the mid-1980s under Don Mazankowski, who was Minister of Transport, when he introduced deregulation, the freedom to move. It was absolutely driven by Transport Canada. There had been discussion documents, white papers, cross-country hearings, a very public discussion on around this transformative policy change. We're seeing less and less of that. We're seeing consultations that sometimes appear to be pro forma. And when you try to probe, when you try to dig, when you try to get some answers, on fundamental questions, we're told that these answers are not available, that the questions cannot be answered because it's a process that falls under sort of budget secrecy, and that has changed the nature of the discussion quite a bit. So ultimately, for us, it means embracing disruptive advocacy, and I want to stress. I mean, this sounds like a scary kind of concept. You know, we're not in the business of throwing bricks through anybody's windows. And there's no doubt that there continues to be an essential role for technical representations and for establishing good faith partnerships with line departments. Absolutely. But there is an additional element because that part, which had been the traditional approach, a transactional approach, built on knowledge and expertise, make a case that was grounded in sound public policy considerations, doesn't work anymore when confronted with some of these political agendas. So just by way of example, and I know I spoke to this on the first call I participated, I think a good example is airport privatization. Our objective was in 2017, January 2017, was avoiding a reference to privatization budget 2017. The reason for that is that we felt if the budget spelled out a process and a way forward, there was no backing away from it. So what did we do? So we had a target. It was budget 2017. And so what we did in the ensuing 2.5 months, we tried to change the political calculus by increasing, sending a clear message to government that the political cost of this would be high and injecting political uncertainty in this exercise. So we reached out to potential partners, the municipal sector, very successful, As you know, there were a number of municipalities, including Toronto, City of Montreal, Victoria, Vancouver, amongst the large cities, but also dozens of smaller communities right across the country that adopted a resolution that we had proposed on this and wrote to the Prime Minister, wrote to the Minister of Transport, the Minister of Finance. We also engaged in proactive media relations. We generated media stories. And it was particularly one story just about a week or two before the budget that seemed to galvanize attention to this. And coupled with outreach we had done on the Hill with members of all parties, there was an opposition day on airport privatization just in the days leading up to the budget. And that became the lead story. That became the lead story. And I have no way of knowing whether this is true, but certainly what we were told by folks that might know was that the budget had a reference to airport privatization in the text, and that was removed 48 hours before. If that's the case, then we were successful. If that wasn't the case, we were still successful because there was no reference to it. But there's no doubt that there was a change in tone in Ottawa after that opposition day, and a much greater prudence around this issue. And as you know, a few weeks ago, Minister of Transport indicated that that was off the table anyway for the time being. So this is an example of where we moved away from making the technical representation, which we had done, and which we had done as an organization. We had done it. Our members had made those technical representations. IATA had made the same representations. We took it to another level. We engaged politically. We changed the nature of the political calculus. And that's something that we need to consider as we go forward in dealing with some of the issues that I identified earlier. So what are the tactics that we use? We develop a story. It's so important to have a story that tells, you know, why this matters to you, but more importantly, why it matters for Canadians. We identified potential partners. We built a coalition. We engaged with the media. We made sure that the story resonated. The way Ottawa works, I can tell you, having worked as a DCOM for a minister, you cannot underestimate the power of a story. You know, there's a story in the morning, clips, it generates question period cards, it generates paper, people pay attention, it moves all the way up. Suddenly something that didn't exist exists, and people pay attention. And we engaged politically with potential partners that saw political value in going forward. Now, that was a defensive positioning. How do we engage in a positive for positive change in the sense of what we're trying to do? Again, we challenged the dominant siloed policy paradigm. We create awareness of the aviation ecosystem. That's one of the things that we're really insisting on. You'll hear us and you'll see us talking about the aviation ecosystem more and more. There has been a tendency in Ottawa to break down our sector into various little components as if we were not part of an integrated whole, and that and to imagine that somehow something that affects one does not affect another part. Of course, you know, we know that that's not the way it works. So we're trying to break through that policy paradigm. We're advocating for a coherent, holistic sectoral policy making, and in so doing, we're trying to change the frame. There's a little video that, if we could show it, it's just a little teaser of a video that we created on the aviation ecosystem that we have on our YouTube channel. And if anybody, it's about a 9-minute video. Just have a minute here. Love technology. Okay, if it doesn't. Okay, that's fine. Anyway, now you know it exists. I wasn't kidding. So it's a little video on the aviation ecosystem we created just for our conference from a few weeks ago, where we really wanted to illustrate the nature, the organic nature of our sector, and how you know, something that affects one part of the air travel experience can have repercussions that are felt, you know, a continent away. And we think it's absolutely essential, for one thing, because from a public policy perspective, we believe you need to have that holistic approach to aviation policy, but also because it allows us to synergize the political capacity of all of the partners in the ecosystem. Moreover, it also and accountability on the part of the Government of Canada for those things that it controls. That is to say, right now, passenger security screening, we talked about CBSA, border screening, and a host of other things, including things in the regulatory realm as well. So by taking this approach, the ecosystem approach, the role of each partner in that ecosystem is evident. And I think we believe it will lead to a better policy making. So in a nutshell, that's my presentation. Any questions or?
Thank you very much. Any questions for Massimo?
It's on it's on our website. But just if you go to YouTube on our YouTube channel. You can find it there, and if you're interested, we can send you a video a file as well if you're interested in sharing it. Yeah.
Any other questions? Massimo, where is the video going? How is it being used? It's on your website, obviously, but how else are you using it, and maybe a little bit more about the key issues that you're tackling? You mentioned CATSA and CBSA, yes. Obviously.
Yeah, no, thank you. You know, all of these pieces are connected. So, you know, we started thinking about this, frankly, as a result of Bill C-49 that, you know, and we were quite clear from the outset, very, very publicly, that we felt that Bill C-49 wasn't, you know, missed a mark because it only looked at airlines, and we said it put a black hat on airlines, but really failed to address you know, the fundamental problems, including the role of the Government of Canada. And it's not only with respect to CATSA or CBSA, which are the most visible, but hear me? Yeah. An advisory circular that that governs the ability of Canadian carriers to use or not use locally sourced maintenance, technical maintenance. And this is particularly true in the Caribbean and a few other locations where you have U.S. air carriers that have FAA-certified technicians on the ground, local technicians that can use them, Well, we have to fly someone from Canada, which means in some cases you've got a plane that has to deadhead to that destination. In other cases, you're flying someone, a technician, and in many cases it means delays, overnights, and so on. Now, the good news is that we've been pressing. Now, interestingly, we've been pressing this issue for a number of years. We're hearing that there's movement. This is critical. And it's a good example of where we were able to leverage the narrative around C-49, around passenger rights, to shine a light on what is really should be low-hanging fruit. Because there's no safety, you know, substantive safety measure there. I mean, this is an artifact. And so this is important. This is an important change. And it shows that there are ways of changing the priority or the setting in Ottawa through this more public engagement that we're embracing. And you know what? And I want to be really clear. This is not about bad will, you know, on the part of Transport Canada. This is about priority setting. This is about scarce resources. It's about processes that have to be followed to move the yardstick. What we're saying is we're taking a more aggressive approach to make sure that our issues get bumped up. That's all that is about.
Great, thank you. Committee members, you'll remember we've talked before about the growth that we've seen at Pearson, for example, and how that's putting stress on the ability for government agencies to keep up. CATSA and CBSA, when we're growing 7-8% in a year, that's challenging for government to continue to find those resources. We stepped up in the case of CATSA and actually making investments ourselves to try and make sure that the passenger throughput's not suffering. And in fact, I think we were the only airport in North America last year that actually saw an improvement in CATSA. Now, you could argue, why are you doing that? That's really the role government should be playing, but at some point you got to help yourself if government can't, and right now government can't. So we do work with the airlines as well. We should have a shared common interest here to make sure that the passenger is the center of this and that people move, and I'm sure from a travel agent's perspective as well. I mean, you want to make sure that people can get to where they want to get to. They're not traveling to airports. We know that. They're traveling to get to destinations to invest and be a tourist and all those other great things that they do. So it's many issues in common, as I said, with the carriers, so it's interesting to see your approach. I'm sorry your video wouldn't show. We'll make sure that it gets out to everybody. But Heather, you had a question?
Well, it was more of, in our presentation to Transport Canada and in our presentation to the Senate Standing Committee, while we don't necessarily feel that the government missed the mark, in a lot of areas that they had noted as far as criteria under the areas that they're going to deal with under a passenger bill of rights, was most part fair, we certainly appreciate the fact that there is a light being shone on the airlines and that there are many stakeholders involved in a travel a plan, so that from the moment you enter the doors of the airport, you a traveler loses control almost, and so there's a lot of players involved, and so we recognize your position and your statements and appreciate and echoed that actually in our in our submissions as well. So, yeah.
Thank you for that. And you know, our members actually support Bill C-49 because it creates, in a limited way, creates an even playing field, right? So that's the good news. The bad news is that this was an opportunity to actually get it right. This opportunity won't present itself for a number of years. So that's the unfortunate part, and that's why this year is so important. really is important we get it right. And so we, you know, we reach out to you and to others to really push the government to try to do better and to seize the opportunity in a, by taking a wider lens to these issues.
What we probably should do for the benefit of all committee members is, as part of what we send out afterwards, is just a bit of a summary on C-49. It has passed through Parliament and received royal assent. The process is now underway to start to work on the regulations, and so those consultations are beginning this week, and submissions are due in August. So we'll provide you with a bit more background on C-49 and what it includes and ways if your organizations are interested in making submissions.
And the first one, as you say, is this week.
Thursday.
So they're hitting 8 cities. Toronto is this Thursday.
Are you appearing?
We are trying to hit as many as possible. This Thursday is a challenge, but we're seeing what we can do to It is Vancouver, Calgary, Yellowknife, Winnipeg. Where am I at now? We've got Toronto, Halifax,
Montreal.
Montreal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm probably missing one. There was 8.
Yeah.
Somewhere else in the East Coast, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I missed Saskatchewan in there, so I'm not just sure if it's Saskatoon or Regina.
Jonathan?
You talked about opportunities to provide input, online opportunities as well, right? You don't have to.
That's right.
No, there's. I know that the CTA is engaging in bilateral consultations, which for sure ACTA is participating in that. But there are opportunities for all stakeholders that it's open to attend one of those.
Oh, sorry, I thought you had your hand up. Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you, Massimo. Appreciate your presentation, and we'll make sure it gets out to the members. So I think next up we have Nelson Oliveira, who is our project director for airport development and construction with the GTAA. We've talked here about the need for better transit connectivity for, 2-3 years. I probably have a broken record for you guys, but good news, when you hear someone with the title project director, it means you're starting to get stuff done. So we've asked Nelson to join us today to provide us with some more background about where we're at with the project, and so with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for allowing me to speak here and give you a bit of an update on where we're at. So basically, I want to walk you through the concept development for the Regional Transit and Processing Center. And I wanted to start with a few slides, which I probably don't even need to go through because I'm kind of preaching to the converted here. But when we look at the area today, the amount of congestion that we're dealing with on highways in and around the airport employment zone is obviously an issue, and it's only going to increase in time there. And that's what the slides are really getting at, 25% to 35%. Increase in driving time by 2043.
And Stephen, I think you just were in that?
No. 2 hours.
And what is driving all this congestion, and what's going to drive it into the future is the airport employment zone, the second largest in Canada, 300,000 jobs. All those trips that we saw in the previous slide are generated by the jobs in the area going to and from work, business meetings, cargo flowing through this area. So that's not going to stop. That's only going to increase. So what do we do about it? This slide speaks to how we compare on a global scale in terms of mode share. 10% of our passengers taking public transit to YYZ on comparison with 36% at Heathrow. Even if you look at the North American competitors that we have, San Francisco at 23%, JFK at 19%, we're lagging behind others in our. And this notion of the lines all passing close to the airport, and a lot of planned lines or planned expansions in and around the airport, and how do we sort of bring that all into a nexus of activity and bringing it closer to the airport and making that passenger flow from rail lines to air traffic a seamless experience. So in preparing for this this exercise, we started to look at other precedents around the world, and this is only a selection of a few that we'll show. But one that's very strong is the Square project in Frankfurt. Open since 2011, it's described as a ground scraper, which is a bit of a new term for me as an architect even. But basically, a skyscraper leaned over on its side, a million square feet of office space. It's the largest office building in Germany. On the front doorstep there, you can see on the right side of the slide is the Frankfurt Airport. Underneath the building is two rail lines that connect both all of Germany and all of Europe, as well as two highways passing close by. One of the taglines that they have on their website that's sort of pandering to, you know, bringing people in and trying to fill the office spaces. You know, where else can you be that, you know, you have highways at the end of your driveway, you have an airport at your doorstep and a rail passing through the basement. So this is sort of the vision that can be created here at Toronto Pearson by linking, having a better link between all those transit modes and the airport. So the new building is made up of mostly office space, so about a million square feet of office space. There are also restaurants and retail, so about 80,000 square feet of retail and office space. There's two hotels as well, both run by Hilton. So it's really that sort of mixed use development. Another precedent we're looking at is Old Oak Common Station in London. This is a project that's on the books and looking to be built by 2026. And the reason why this is a good example is it brings a lot of the transit aspects and the transportation aspects together. It doesn't have an airport. It has connections to Heathrow, but it's not physically adjacent to the airport. But it's looking at, you know, how the lines can intersect. And this particular facility, there's a Great West Main Line, there's cross. So that's also coming into the station. So how do those layer up, and how does the passenger experience between lines and interchanges work? Is a good lesson that we can learn for the transit center. And this is a project by HOK, who's a firm that we hired earlier this year to help us with the RTC. But this is a project in Anaheim that was built in 2014. And although this also has the connections of all the different transit rail lines that they have in California, so within California regional sort of transit, also state-to-state or interstate travel, there's also lessons to be learned here in terms of preserving for future connections. So this building also includes future platforms for a magnetic LEB train between Nevada and California. It includes for a potential high-speed rail, which doesn't exist today in California, but could connect throughout all of the state. And these are things that we have to think of as well in our sector, because a lot of these lines, although they're on the books, are at different stages of development. When will they actually reach the airport? So we want to be able to preserve for those eventualities in the future. This will connect to Las Vegas. That's a magnetic. It has no connection between tracks and train. It actually is super high speeds, so that's planned on the books. I'm not sure exactly the timeline. It does have a connection to LAX as well. Uh, And so, as I mentioned earlier, we hired in about Q1 of 2018 through a competitive process, HOK Architects, who's heading up a team that includes WSP, who are leaders in the engineering and transportation field in Canada, and also Weston Williams Partners, who are a large architecture firm out of the UK, who've done a lot of work on Heathrow Airport and Old Oak Common Station, which you saw in the deck here as well. I won't get too much into the other players on the team, but it's pretty much a solid team of engineering and consulting firms that work globally. I'll run through these fairly quickly, but I just wanted to give a taste of why we selected HOK to help us through this process and some of the work that they've done. This is an image of LaGuardia Airport in New York, and it's reimagining. So this is the final state, and they're going through a bunch of projects that are going to get them from where they are today to this ultimate vision. And this leads us to believe that HOK is primed to help us with the phasing aspects that we're going to have to deal with at the RTC. This project had multiple phases, at least upwards of 20 phases, where things were built and moved around the site, and that's exactly what we're going to have to do at the RTC as well. This is an example of iconic architecture, Doha International or Hamad International Airport in Doha. And it speaks to the ability of HOK to kind of take that, very complicated building and distill down to an expression that could, could easily be applied to the RTC to make basically that interesting place, that interesting feature, architectural feature that could define Pearson. Atlanta Airport, Hartsfield-Jackson, the largest airport by passenger number in North America, over 100 million passengers. The reason why I include this is not only that they have experience in large airports, but also one thing that we're considering on the RTC is expandable and flexible structures. Things that can go up quickly, can be prefabricated off-site and be brought onto site, and this is an example of that. You can see the cranes sort of lowering to position a bunch of repetitive sort of steel frames that make up the terminal building. So definitely something that we could leverage for the RTC as well. And lastly, just that sense of placemaking on the interior. This is the Salt Lake City International Airport that HOK as well worked on. You can imagine these concourses being able to flow from not only transit to transit mode, but also through to the airport as well. So what is the mandate? What did we hire HOK for? So they're developing a concept design for the Regional Transit Processing Center that incorporates the ability for the airport to grow to 85 million passengers with a strategy of how to grow in the future. So that's that may be the end goal for the 2037 timeline, but what happens beyond? The flexibility to accommodate all the contemplated transit lines. So whether it's high frequency rail, high speed rail, whether it's the Eglinton LRT, the Finch LRT, any types of lines that are on the books right now that are crossing by the airport, how do we flexibly accommodate for everything to automated people movement is part of their scope. How do we move passengers? And this is, for our part, how do we move passengers from the RTC to the existing infrastructure we have and within the existing infrastructure we have? Road networks, depending on where this facility is located, it's going to have to be reconnected with all of the existing roads, the 427, the 401, all of the airport road and local road network as well. Relocation of utilities, moving that utilities out of the way if they happen to be in the way of where the final location happens to be. Ability also to phase the development. So this is a key one. Looking at the end state vision, but also how do we get there from here? How do we break off small pieces in order to So I've broken the mandate into two parts. For the first part, we're looking at being complete in the fourth quarter of this year. And it's really what we call the planning approach development. It's looking at the blocking and stacking of all the things that make up the regional transit center and stacking them on the site and actually doing a test fit to see if they fit on the site, make sure the relationships all work together, make sure that all automated people mover network makes sense, make sure the parking can be accommodated and it can be shifted. That's one of the key things is that throughout the process, a lot of construction will happen, a lot of standard for. And we're building things ahead of time so that we can make the moves. After Q4 2018 into 2019, we'll be looking at refining the selected planning approach. So we're down to, we're past the blocking and planning stage. We've picked one of the options on the approach, and we're looking at developing that further. Site exterior concept, we're looking at the flows of baggage and passengers through the terminal and through the RTC. We're looking at how we can enhance that passenger experience, retail offerings, the flow offering that we talked about, looking at APM also from the side of technology and the stations and how they interrelate. This is actually complicated by the different types of passengers we have and the transfer passengers, also the transborder, domestic, international, and how they relate with the APM and how they have to be segregated and have different security levels. So that's something that we need to work through as well. Phasing and cost is key. Those are all the slides I had for today, but happy to take any questions.
Questions for Nelson? Dan?
Is artificial intelligence or, well, it's collaborative intelligence or connectivity intelligence involved?
Yeah, so we actually had a workshop, I believe it was last week, where we went through a whole range of disruptors, and AI was on the list of disruptors, disruptors being things that we see in the future that are coming that may impact our planning or may change our planning that we have to either put them in the bucket of they will happen and so we should, you know, rightfully plan for them, or they may or may not happen so we have to maybe preserve for them, plan for them. So one of the things we were talking about was the proliferation of Uber and the fact that Uber is now looking at being able to fly people from place to place, having hubs throughout cities and being able to fly them on small helicopters or drones into, you know, different places. Is that something that the airport should be looking to? Is it something that's going to happen, you know, 20 years from now, 30 years from now? So it's things like that, and AI definitely fits into that. AI is actually a little bit probably ahead because there are some airports that are using artificial intelligence. I think of Munich Airport, where they actually have concierge that can answer your questions and interact with passengers. So it's definitely one of those leading edge.
Any other questions? Stephen? Oh, sorry, Jonathan.
Sorry, a similar question. We know historically across Canada we have a challenge with our local businesses being of a new product introduction. Is there any thought throughout this process to have staging areas, opportunities for our businesses here to showcase their technologies as they look to, you know, go global?
I think we're at the starting point of developing concepts, but I think as we go through this process, we have a lot of opportunity to actually do that kind of thing. We've been talking with our stakeholder group with Siobhan and Lori about, you know, setting up workshops or mock-ups or engaging some of the local universities and colleges in design charrettes. So I think there's tactics that we can apply and definitely engaging the local community and local industries, one that we should be on our books.
Yeah, I mean, the need to engage with multiple stakeholders beyond our business, we've got lots in-house as well. I mean, obviously, our airline partners, government agencies are heavily involved. Our employees, in terms of making sure we're talking to them about their needs and how they'll work, because, I mean, it is a passenger processing facility, first and foremost, but then we're going to connect the transit to that as well. This is a big project. 2027, I think, is when we're hoping to be open for the first operations. So, and it'll be a phased opening. I mean, obviously, you don't on day one, but it definitely is a big project for us. From we're getting jammed in terms of passenger processing, so we need to fix that. And we know as a sort of as a resident as well as an airport how congestion is slowing down the economy, but also slowing down us getting to work and being where we need to get to. So it plays a role from for benefiting from an airport perspective, but very much a regional role in terms of moving people around. I think Stephen and then Vidar.
Yeah. Thank you very much. The fact. Just two quick questions. So I apologize for being late, and maybe you covered it earlier in the presentation. So the first one is, you noted that your design is flexible and is being considered independent of what kind of lines might come into the hub. And I'm just wondering if there is any GTA formal position on what lines you would prefer. Do you want to see the LRT, for example? Do you want to see that buried from Mount Dennis up through Renforth to the hub? Or do you want to see at grade? Is high-speed rail necessary for this project to move forward? So that's the first question. The second question is, how much consideration and emphasis is being put on how we travel around the airport once we get here, the last mile problem? Because that's something that the workers at the airport are very concerned about. They're very excited about these possibilities of with the hub, but they're also worried about what kind of delays there's going to be going from FedEx to somewhere else because there's no proper intermediary transit for that huge airport circulation.
On the staff issue, getting around in terms of locally at the airport, part of what HOK is looking at in the concepts is, you know, that local interconnectivity as well. So not just on the broad scheme, but you know, how does staff get from parking to the terminals, and not just to the terminal, but, you know, to all pieces, because now we'll have, or eventually we'll have, you know, an RTC and TNU, we'll have a T1 and a T3. So disparate sort of infrastructure. So they all have to be connected. So it's definitely something we're looking at. I can't say that, you know, we have the silver bullet right now, but it's definitely high on the agenda and high on what we're looking at. Successful scheme.
And the announcement about the partnership with Metrolinx, the fact that we're working to collectively fund studies to support this. I mean, there's last mile studies as part of that work as well, because it's always been part of the Metrolinx agenda as well to deal with some of those last mile solutions. And they did, was it 2015 when their precinct study was completed, which looked at sort of the airport area. And so that work needs to be updated, and that last mile piece can be part of that as well. In terms of, I think you had another question around which lines do you prefer. I don't think we have come to conclusions on that yet.
There's no official position yet on that question. Okay.
At this point, we're looking at them all.
Curious, is there guiding all of this, is there an aspirational modal split between active LRT and other elements of that? I should probably know all that context, but
I think there's the realistic level that we think we're going to achieve, which is on par with our competitors in North American market, so pushing to 20%, but why not try and, you know, see if we can't push the envelope and get up to 35% and be out ahead of anybody in North America. So I think there's two sort of ranges. There's a 20%, which we think is going to happen, and a 35%, which we really hope.
Badar, sorry, I missed.
So I know listening to the rhetoric that's coming out of the political circles, you wouldn't think, but there's a very robust conversation going on between Canadian and American chambers, especially just around the border in Buffalo, Niagara, around perhaps creating a free trade zone. Has there been any
creating a free trade zone?
Sorry. Yeah. So the notion is, and think about it from the perspective of actually our American cousins on the other side of the border. If you're Niagara or Buffalo, New York, the closest population hub from a trading perspective for them is not New York. It's Toronto. They're literally an hour and a half drive from us, right? So they are actually very keen in not only connecting their research institutions with institutions on this side of the border, but they would also like to actually collaborate with Greater Niagara Chamber of Commerce, Hamilton Chamber of Commerce, amongst others, to sort of push for a free trade zone right just around the borderline. So as we are planning for our regional transit hub, utilizing Pearson, has there been any discussions amongst the stakeholders around how such a free trade zone might actually be able to leverage the transit strategy?
I don't think so. I mean, just thinking of the lines that we're working with Metrolinx and MTO on, you know, potentially connecting to the regional transit center. They're all, you know, there's the eastward looking, like the Eglinton LRT and Finch LRT. But in terms of out to Niagara,
no, the only thing I can think of is in talking to the province and the federal government in terms of some of the coordination of planning that has to happen related to this, the goods movement discussion came up. And in fact, when we said, well, we've worked with Peel Region and their goods movement strategy, it was acknowledged by both the province and the federal government that Peel is actually the leaders in Canada in terms of being the most advanced in terms of goods movement. So there's opportunities, I think, for us to think about how does goods movement fit in, and obviously a free trade zone would be part of that. But is that something that Boards of Trade are thinking about advancing through as a policy discussion with the Canadian Chamber or...
Yeah, so
OCC, maybe?
Yeah, so I think the discussion is fairly robust amongst the municipalities on both sides of the border, as well as amongst the regional chambers on both sides, all the way to Hamilton Chamber of Commerce. I am not sure whether Hamilton Chamber and Greater Niagara Chamber has already taken it to Ontario Chamber of Commerce for a discussion and them to Canadian Chamber, but it's definitely, I think, being coordinated by the chambers as well as the municipalities.
Any other questions for Nelson before we move on? Great, thank you, Nelson. Oh, absolutely. We'll make sure it goes out with the minutes. And we will keep you updated on the progress. As we mentioned, the work that we're doing with Metrolinx on the partnership around the studies, I think probably at our next meeting we'll be able to talk in more detail about so that work plan of studies that is advancing with Metrolinx and other government. So we'll try and get that brought forward for a future discussion. Thanks, Nelson. So that brings us to, actually very apropos, a resolution that's been put forward by Shane Raymond. So Shane, as you guys know, a colleague from City of Toronto, and Shane, I'll let you speak to it directly.
Thank you.
I think a copy of this resolution was circulated to everybody, and there's probably some at the back as well if you don't have it. They all have it? Okay, perfect.
Okay.
So I'll turn it over to you.
This is a resolution that I spoke about back in November. The intention of it is we've been hearing for a long time about coordinated efforts with respect to ground transportation, and I think through the time I've served on this committee, it's been the real priority of this committee, or one of the priorities, to address these issues because it really has a massive impact on all the stakeholders who are present here. From the time we originally discussed this in November to now, I think the issue's been developed quite a bit. There's been announcements by the province and certain announcements by Metrolinx. And the intent of this motion, I'm not going to read the motion because I think everyone's reviewed it, is to try to create some form of coordination. So all of the plans that are being put forward are coordinated amongst stakeholders. And I believe every stakeholder, every city that borders the airport, every region that either borders the airport or is very close to it, really should have a voice in this, because they're all working on ground transportation plans that will all really come to a hub at or near the airport. And having this coordinated would not only benefit the airport itself, but the regions that are investing billions of dollars into their future for transportation. And just knowing those plans, it might not just be having the airport do certain things, but letting the stakeholders coordinate, preserve rights of way for future connectivity, like what Stephen was talking about, that last mile, trying to figure out how everything can fit in together. So all of these new LRT initiatives can really connect and be used. So if you want to get from Vaughan to Hamilton, you could still connect through the airport hub. And it's not just specific to the airport, but for the entire Greater Toronto region. Now, I do want to say that with this resolution, I don't know if anyone's heard, but there was just an election in the province. And I don't know if things are changing or if there's a moving target. And I don't want this resolution in any way to impair or distract from the bigger picture. And that's why before, like, I don't know, this is for consideration today. It doesn't need to go to a vote today. And I would recommend that we hear what the staff from the Greater Toronto Airports Authority have to say about it. And I really, at least in my recommendation, I think this is important. But I think this, it's something we're going to have to be worrying about this for decades to come. And whether this resolution is passed today or whether we want to hear what the representatives of the Greater Toronto Airports Authority have to say about it and digest certain things and see how the chips fall and give it a bit of time. So I'm not in some rush to say this has to happen. So I think maybe we could just turn it over to GTAA representatives and hear their comments.
Thanks, Shane. So when Shane raised this, and it was November 2017, you weren't at our last meeting, so we didn't get a chance to talk about it then. But Shane talked about it, and at the time our reaction as a committee, I think, was, well, it just makes sense, right? This stuff needs to be coordinated. There's multiple transit lines with different transit authorities involved and different municipalities around us and, you know, province and federal government involved and an agency called Metrolinx. So, you know, it just made sense to us that there needs to be some way to coordinate. You've got a not-for-profit private company called the GTAA that operates your airport. So it's you know, it's complicated governance stuff. Since that time, I can tell you that, you know, we've, as Shane mentioned, we've had the announcement with Metrolinx on the joint study. So we're really pleased that that's advancing. And just this morning, there was a really great meeting, as Siobhan mentioned, where we had the federal government, the province of Ontario, Metrolinx, GTA, and consultant teams together to start digging into those various studies. There are also very active conversations happening both with the province and the federal government. And I know that as studies advance, engagement with municipalities and their transit authorities will have to happen. It's part of the work plan. It has to happen. I mean, Metrolinx doesn't run all the transit lines. The City of Toronto and the TTC and other agencies are going to have to be involved. So I think the spirit of what's being suggested here is bang on. And it just goes to show that, Shane, you saw this back in 2017 when we were still sort of thinking about how to pull ourselves together. So I think it's makes sense. What I would argue is I think the spirit of what's being suggested here is in fact happening quite actively now, and we're really feeling quite good about some of the announcements that have happened and some of the work that's underway. I'd open it up maybe to the committee to ask any questions of Shane or of the GTAA in terms of what this might mean or look like.
Yeah, first of all, I was excited to make this. Obviously, well thought out.
I actually envision, now there's been some modifications to the wording, I've gone back and forth with Lori and Siobhan. It would really, I don't think it's our place to, like, we can't strike a committee, and even a subcommittee work, like, I don't know if that's the most effective way, but rather putting a resolution to request that the GTAA puts forward a committee, or if the GTAA believes that a subcommittee is more appropriate. I just think there has to be some coordination, and the mechanics of it, I think, have to be at the behest and direction of the GTAA. Is that
well,
an answer?
Just when you come to the, there's a resolution.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% clear. Is it a resolution where we're just asking and recommending the GTAA?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, that's,
yeah.
That's
and I do think being a subcommittee, like, it's got to be something separate. Okay. The GTA has other committees. They have ones on, like, noise. And that, like, I think it's a really critical issue.
Okay, that's
so, yeah, and that the resolution could be clarified in that regard as well.
So maybe a friendly amendment to one is that the GTA strike a committee to coordinate?
Yes.
John?
Yeah, this question's really.
Yes.
I think it's parallel.
That's what I had envisioned.
But I'd say parallel to this, but not our board. I mean, our board is an oversight board. It's not, right?
I just want to say I don't know enough about the mechanics of the way the GTAA works in the senior levels. And I really, that's why we're saying to the GTA, perhaps this would be a good idea. And I think deference has to be given to the GTA to figure out how's the best way to implement it and organize it. If I knew more, I'd put more in. But.
Ken?
First of all, great idea, Shane. I really like it. And just as example, for a committee, I was on the Unlocking Gridlock Committee, a citizens group of 23 lawyers, business people, people with international transit experience were part of this committee, and it's about 4.5 years ago. We had somebody, a politician, in Queen's Park, and this is before Kathleen Wynne got elected. It was a 100-page report. We were on TV with what's the guy on... I can't remember his name with CP24, but we ran all the news channels. It only cost $100 to produce this report. It was all volunteer. We spent about 9 or 10 months working on this, and 85% of our recommendations, including the LRT, Smart Track, that John Tory stole the term from us, which I think that was kind of cute. Anyway, we presented to all of the boards of trade, the regions, the cities, and 85% of our recommendations went through. And this was a committee of 23 that we just gelled, and we worked very hard together, but it paid off. And, oh, there was Drake McGrew, or what's his name? What's a guy on TV? Stephen Rigouli says, oh my God, a group of 23 people put this report together with $100, and so why are we paying for all these consultants in Toronto? But that's what he said on TV, and they were saying. So I mean, don't underestimate the value of having a committee, diverse experience, knowledge, and what they can do. So you're on the right route.
So I just have a comment just for some clarification. On the second bullet, there's a comment here that the GTAA Ground Transportation Committee includes representatives from a wide variety of communities here and says that have a voice and input in the planning for ground transportation. And then on the third bullet, it says the GTAA Ground Transportation Committee has a mandate to discuss, facilitate, coordinate, and plan the ground transportation. Are we saying that the committee would plan it or have input on the planning?
They're not the ones who plan it. It's going to be all the levels of the participants in the committee who plan it. York Region's going to plan York Region's transit, or the federal government will. Halton is not going to plan York Region's But it would really be a voice in the planning. They wouldn't, I'd love it if this committee could be the ultimate Politburo of planning for all, but there's not going to be a centralized.
And that's why I wonder if it would.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
An amendment as well.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense in my opinion.
Excellent suggestion, and I really like the idea. I just have one clarity that, as Stephen mentioned, there should be some kind of a clarity that this particular committee would be working with this consultative committee as well. So,
I'd like it if it did, because I'd like an involvement. But quite frankly, I think we should leave that up to the GTAA. And I'll just give you an example. This consultative committee is public. Anyone's allowed to walk in and observe it. Where if they're talking about the preservation of rights of way and certain planning elements, it might be a confidential committee. It might not be an open committee.
Yes.
And this is why I don't know, and I don't think I know enough to direct the GTAA in how it's formulated. So I'm not saying it shouldn't. I really would like it if we could have participation. But I don't want to tie its hands in a resolution. I just want to see a committee formed and really defer to the bigger pictures, because I do know some of these issues quite often have to take place behind closed doors.
Could build into the resolution a clause that talks about regular reports back.
Or keep us posted.
Communication to the consultative committee.
Yeah.
Yes.
Quarterly basis, whatever makes sense.
Thank you.
Yeah, at each meeting, exactly. Maybe that's it. Okay. So what is the will of the committee?
I think it's really a great idea. We should put this for a vote today.
We have a couple of amendments. We can make those amendments and table it. We can make those amendments and bring it back to our next meeting. We can circulate it and do something over email. I think there's a couple of options here.
Could I ask just the GTA representatives, do you think it might make sense? Do you think there's going to be any chips that fall in the next few months with the new government? Or do you think that might be a long time? I know you don't know. I know there's no way to say for sure.
I don't know. I think we all read platforms, and I think we all listened to campaign speeches. And so I don't know what the direction is for sure. We don't have a cabinet. We don't have a minister. So there's still a fair amount of unknowns at this point. At the provincial level.
That the airport is such a connectivity worldwide for all of the products coming into Canada, not just from the U.S., but worldwide and going out, and for businesses. If the premier, our new premier, is really pro on getting businesses successful, why would you tamper with the Toronto Pearson Airport? That's just on a level, because there's so much product coming in, and any way that you can make it easier for businesses to get the shipments in and out of the airport.
Never say never, but one thing to point out is the commitment with Metrolinx for us to financially support the study work. That's been made, that money's been moved over to Metrolinx, and so that activity to a certain extent is protected. I say never say never because government can always change their mind, but that happened, right? It's not like it was a campaign promise that's yet to happen. That happened in advance of the election, and so that work is underway, and we hope, particularly with a private sector company coming to the table, help support financially studies that it doesn't end up on the chopping block. And we'll work very hard, and I hope all of our stakeholders and voices around the table work very hard to make sure that it's acknowledged how important this work is to get done. Bedard?
I can't remember, but did we actually get some sort of formal backing from Ontario Chamber of Commerce for this project? Have we ever approached Ontario Chamber of Commerce to have a resolution in this project?
We did talk about it. Cheryl, I'm going to ask you, one of the things we have talked about is getting a resolution related to connectivity, and there's a resolution that Jan, you brought today, which is going through to the Canadian Chamber. I think we need to, you would understand this, Bedard. I mean, you can't take a very local issue to the Canadian Chamber and expect it to pass. Or even Ontario, it has to be Ontario-wide or it has to be national. So this one is for Canadian Chamber.
Yeah, this is in front of you, and I just think there's one person that didn't get a copy of it. It's just a draft that's been prepared. This is called the Board of Trade, and you're aware of it.
Yeah.
So do you want to make some of the chambers of commerce and because Toronto Pearson Airport is so important that flying and also because so much business is done in throughout Canada with companies, we have a company. So people are traveling and CEOs, employees are traveling to various sites even in Canada, but the U.S.
National Transit.
So, but having this connectivity, a lot of the Americans say it takes us 2 days to get from one state to another. We have to go to four airports. It's insane. And they say, in Canada, you guys have direct flights to major locations in the U.S., and it's just so much easier to get around in Canada with your flights. So, That's really a good thing for business and connecting people.
So I guess we have the resolution in front of us that Shane has brought forward. You've asked a question, Bedard, about whether Ontario Chamber has ever supported us. I don't believe they have, but Canadian Chamber is looking at something, and I think we absolutely be open to a resolution in front of the Ontario Chamber at their policy conference as well. So let's park that one so we don't muddy the water too much with this conversation right now. So what we could do, maybe, Siobhan, the best thing is for us to look at adjusting it based on the conversation today. Shane, we'll do that in coordination with you.
Yeah.
And then we can circulate it to the committee. We can do that in advance of the next meeting.
When is the next meeting? Sorry, I should know this.
When's our next meeting, Ingrid?
September 11th.
September 11th. So that's quite a ways away, but.
I don't think much happens between now and September anyway when it comes to a lot of, this resolution has to go to someone else, and whether we put it in the mailbox today or in September, it might arrive and be read around the same time.
Okay, so if it's everyone's comfortable
with
that.
Might be an idea we'll revise
we'll
it, circulate
the
it,
next meeting
and then in September.
For discussion?
Give me a chance to get some input.
Then if anyone needs to talk internally in their own organizations.
I'm curious, would you guys have, so internally, would you be looking at things such as composition of the committee, terms of reference, or those things that you would take?
It probably gets more complicated because if we're talking about a committee that involves other levels of government, we'd have to engage with them around something like that as well.
I also think, I don't want us to be the ones to say this is how the committee should be. We just want to see the coordination.
Right.
leave it to the GTAA.
No, that's it. Yeah, I'm hoping
and
so.
Really, I'd like the GTAA to have a role in this hub.
Yeah.
That's what worries me, too, is that other powers that be in this area, because it's a lot, like you could take the airport out of this area, it would still be the logical place for a GTA hub.
Sure.
I'd like to make, like the more the GTAA could have a bit of mastery over the process, I think it would benefit the bigger picture.
So we'll bring it back in September, and as I said, I think we've been seeing some positive momentum, so hopefully that continues, and we'll have a positive report back in September on it.
And Donna, you mentioned you'd like to make sure that you're able to consult with.
I think
yeah, so we can circulate it, you know, quite far in advance of the next committee meeting.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Shane, for
you're
doing
welcome.
That. So as part of our member update, maybe we can go first to this resolution, Jan, that you've put forward. When is the policy conference for the Canadian Chamber? No way. It's September as well, okay.
There's a fairly big.
So as I mentioned, we are working with the Mississauga Board of Trade on the wording of this and in large part to make sure it has a national scope in its wording so that it has a hope of getting through a Canadian Chamber discussion. And that's actively happening right now. So we're hopeful that we can get something forward. And so you said September. I'm not sure exactly which date.
I can't remember the date, but it is in, I believe, Thunder Bay.
But it would be great to have the Brampton Board of Trade and the Toronto Regional Board of Trade voice their support when this hits the floor. I assume both will be at the Canadian Chamber meeting.
Yeah, I'm sure Podletz and others are having these conversations in the background. If they're not, then I would certainly bring it up to them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Jonathan, any updates from you?
I have an update, maybe I do. So I had a conversation with one of the transportation department, and I talked a little bit about the work that's happening. And the discussion around the hub. And he is open to coming in September to provide a presentation on the region's transportation master plan, give you a sense of what York Region has done and is doing over the next few years. So he'd be excited to participate. And I think from what's being discussed here, including the resolution, he might want to have some input as well.
Great. Thank you. We'd love to have him.
Talk about a train from a business perspective. I just wanted to have this one other item I wanted to say. Currently, there are a building in Canada that wins. This is from the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. Currently, there's
a 130,000 regulations and rules, policies that are affecting businesses across Canada. These policies and regulations are with government, a lot of them from the federal and provincial government, and it's stifling business. I'll read this to you. It's a growing mix of complex, costly, overlapping rules from basically all levels of government, but mainly from the federal and provincial. And a new report by the Canadian Chamber of Commerce on May 31st of this year has called it death by 130,000 cuts, improving Canada's regulatory competitiveness. So it's inconsistent and unpredictable rules and process that's making it difficult for large, medium, and small businesses to comply. And this is leading to our businesses being less competitive throughout Canada and becoming less attractive place to invest and start to grow a business in Canada compared to around the world. The Honorable Perrin Beattie, President and CEO of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, states, Regulations are designed to keep us safe and create the level playing field, but when they are to smother businesses across Canada, that's becoming a real problem. So I just wanted to let you know, the government only reviews, there's a report by the Canadian Chamber of Commerce about this, and the government only reviews these rules and regulations once every 5 years. And you can see the change and the amount of disruption, but also how quickly businesses are having to change within the world right now. So I just wanted to raise this. It's an issue. There's policies and regulations in this 130,000 that are 50 and 60 years old. They're talking about telex machines before fax. This is how outdated a lot of these 130,000 regulations and rules are. So I think it needs to be cleaned up, but I just wanted to bring it to your attention, because if it's blocking businesses in Canada and we're not as competitive as the U.S. and other countries around the world, this needs to be addressed. So I just wanted to share that with you guys.
So thank you, Jen. I've got two updates. First, we are holding an e-commerce national workshop at University of Toronto. Transport Canada, MTO, Peel is organizing this workshop. This workshop is organized to develop an e-commerce strategy. We have seen that there are many businesses they want to locate, or they would be coming to Canada, and we want to provide the best e-commerce strategy at all levels, so at the national level, regional level, as well as the local level. And we have invited several good speakers from all over Canada, including Montreal and Vancouver and other places. So I'll certainly encourage all our consultative committee members to attend this e-commerce national workshop, and CEOBAN will be circulating you the invitation. It's only by invitation. We are expecting around 60 to 70 people to attend this workshop. So if you have an interest in e-commerce, please do attend.
When is it?
It's on June 27th at University of Toronto. And we are charging a very nominal fee, just $50, which would go to University of Toronto students as a scholarship. It is going to be in the downtown campus.
And we will circulate some information on that.
Yes, we will circulate that. That's in June 27th, and it is facilitated by Transport Canada. And the second update, the Region of Peel Council approved the Smart Freight Center, which I provided an update at the last meeting. It's now officially approved by Region of Peel Council. Region of Peel will provide $1.2 million for next 5 years to University of Toronto, York, as well as McMaster University. And this Smart Freight Center would be for the entire GTA Hamilton area, so not just for the Region of Peel. And it will be focusing on data, infrastructure, as well as policies. And we would be also consulting various agencies, both public sector as well as private sector partners, to join Smart Freight Center. So we will be approaching MTO, Transport Canada, as well as regional municipalities, local municipalities, and GTA as well. Our goal is to establish a Smart Freight Center that will support sustainable transportation as well. So our goal is to reduce empty truck travel trip, increase efficiency of goods movement. So there's less traffic congestion on our roads as far as the trucking is concerned. And it will be for all modes. So not just for trucks, but it will be for all modes, including marine as well as air. And we are hoping that in fall there is going to be a big launch, and we are aiming at inviting the Prime Minister for the launch. And we are looking for partners. So if GTA is interested, please let us know.
You want me to call the Prime Minister?
No, actually, we have been working with Transport Canada. And
we're buddies, yeah.
Actually, we have been working with Transport Canada as well as senior staff in the ministries, and they will be assisting as well. But if you have any good connections, please let us know.
Pretty sure I don't.
What have been told that the Prime Minister receives more than 250 or 300 requests per day to attend various functions. So it may be very challenging, but looking at the scale of the project and various governments as well as agencies involved, and it's also assisting the businesses, this particular Smart Fare Center may be very beneficial. And one last thing I want to mention, I did mention last time that we are launching an off-peak delivery pilot project. So that has been approved, and we have 7 businesses which are partnering with us. We'll have a media release very shortly, and you will see that off-peak delivery pilot project would be implemented in GTA Hamilton area, which will help to reduce truck trips during peak period. And Metrolinx, as well as Atmospheric Fund, is also providing us some funding for that project.
All right, an update from the Toronto Board of Trade, one on strategy, some strategy work that they've been doing, and then 2 quick event updates. The Toronto Board of Trade has spent the last 6 months or so reviewing their strategy. They call it Strategy 2024. So really looking at how they're going to prioritize their work in the years to come. They've concluded that they'll be focusing on 4 distinct areas. The first will be developing an economic blueprint to forecast growth trends, talent and infrastructure needs. The second will be elevating the work they've already started on the industry clusters. The third will be helping businesses to scale up. So that's using things like their Trade Accelerator Program, which has already been in place for a couple of years. And the fourth will be expanding trade services for their members. So it's a kind of strategic shift and fairly aggressive expansion work underway at the Toronto Board of Trade right now. Earlier today, they had their annual lunch together with Mayor Tory. He gave the keynote address and, amongst other things, reaffirmed his commitment to, you know, stop talking about the need to work out transportation for the city and to really just get all the partners around the table and do something about it. So that was a popular comment amongst the group there earlier today. And then one event that's coming up that some of you will be aware of, I think, June 26th, the Canada Innovation Corridor Summit at the Royal Botanical Gardens in Burlington. The Toronto Board of Trade are helping to run 3 workshops that will be part of that event on the 26th, which will focus on the 5th movement of goods report, which they're going to launch on that day. So the 3 things they'll be looking at will be, there'll be a workshop on unblocking the Highway 401 bottleneck, a second workshop on supporting the growth of Canada's transportation mega hub, and a third one on off-peak deliveries as well. So quite a lot of overlap in terms of focus, which I think is a good thing. So that's the update from the Toronto Board of Trade.
Great. You stole my thunder, which is great, on the Canada Innovation Summit. So, yeah, happening in Burlington on June 26th. That's great. I missed the last meeting, so one of the announcements we had in the first quarter, government, was the announcement of the Milton Wilfrid Laurier University campus in partnership with Conestoga. So now the dust is settling a little bit. Laurier will be looking to see how they advance that project with, it's going to be focused on science, technology, engineering, and with a campus opening in 2021. So there's a lot of work that needs to get done for that. Conversations, we're just starting our strategic planning process for the new term of council. The internal discussions are happening, and one of the things that certainly came up first and foremost for us internally at the Halton region is growth congestion. So sort of the infrastructure piece around how do we get goods movement, how do we move people within within our region, between our region and Peel, et cetera, are huge for us, I think, over the next 4 years. So we actually don't own the transit file at Halton Region. It's a little bit different than York. But we are doing a series of small R regional transportation projects, working with our local municipalities. I don't think this will be an election issue in the fall, but I think we will see the region probably over time providing. So today's motion is actually a great one. Thank you, Shane, for raising that. I think we'd like to think that we're going to be involved with that. Yeah, and that's basically it, other than we're looking forward to seeing the GTAA as our regional council coming up on July 11th with our new member. Thanks.
All right, Badar, that's your next.
So a couple of things. First of all, I think in Brampton, we're all quite pleased with the fact that the City Council has unanimously accepted the new economic development master plan that was presented to the Council by the City staff and was created in partnership with the star urban planner, Beasley. There were a number of consultations that the city staff had conducted going back to a year, year and a half, that led to the proposal, and basically, the proposal envisions a very strong core downtown hub for the city, which will be anchored not just by the come to Brampton Ryerson University campus, but also within an innovation hub. So that and the proximity of both those new entities to GO train station in downtown Brampton creates a very interesting environment going forward in terms of connecting Brampton as sort of a middle of the way location in the innovation corridor. So from all the way to Kitchener-Waterloo to Union Station. So exciting times ahead. The region continues that we'll be sitting at approximately 900,000 people by 2035. And on the chamber side, we continue to look at those numbers, the urban plans, and do what we can in terms of engaging business stakeholders from around the world in terms of inviting them to take advantage of the opportunities. So my next comments would be more or less along those lines. Brampton Board of Trade has been working with the big city chambers, along with Toronto Regional Board of Trade, over the last year or so, in terms of both supporting the negotiations around NAFTA. Very recently, they did hold a joint meeting with chambers from the United States as well as Mexico and Montreal, where all chambers collectively passed a resolution to continue to work together collaboratively in terms of encouraging their respective political administrations to upgrade NAFTA rather than throwing hurdles. We'll see how that will come along. I recently had an opportunity to visit Los Angeles, had a chance to meet the president for Global Center for International Trade and Investment. That's part and parcel of Los Angeles Area Chamber. So while Toronto and GTA is the largest metro area in Canada, Los Angeles metro area is the second largest in the United States. And for those of you who might not be aware, there are already about 1,200 business locations in California that are owned by Ontario businesses. So from real estate brokers like Collier to Brookfield Asset Management to Cott Beverages right here in Mississauga, Open Tax from Waterloo, all of these businesses have a very strong presence in Brampton. And so we have now also started a dialogue between Brampton Board of Trade, Los Angeles Area Chamber, and the U.S. Consulate Staff Trade Commissioner Services in Toronto and our Trade Commissioner Services in Los Angeles to explore opportunities to further collaborate and increase interaction between our businesses. My understanding from the last conversation we had was that Todd, our CEO, was going to take that project to our large city chamber network as well to see if we can perhaps partner in it at a broader level and do it collaboratively. So we'll see how that will come about. Lastly, at a personal level, I've been invited For those of you who might not be aware, I used to be the director for international trade for our chamber for about 7 years, and in those years had done some work in terms of building a network of business stakeholders between Brampton and Turkey. We enjoy an MOU with a chamber in Turkey called Kocaeli Chamber of Industry. Kocaeli is where 16% of Turkish manufacturing happens. Magna's Turkish plant is in Kocaeli. Ford, Goodyear, a number of North American brands are based in Kocaeli. There are already logistical links between Kocaeli and Mississauga, SIVA Logistics, Service Boat Corridors, DSV Logistics Corridors. So now that I'm done with my term on the board of Brampton Board of Trade, I've been invited by Canada-Turkey Business Council to consider joining their board, which includes primarily Canadian business services sector representatives, as well as Canadian mining and commodity sector businesses. So AGT, the largest exporter of lentils, for instance, is on the board. Silver Met, Alamos Gold, they're on the board. So the intention is to beef up that board and leverage my network within the Ontario Chamber network to basically beef up the board, bring a more diverse representation from a sectoral perspective, and then truly engage the regional chamber network here in Ontario to vigorously push for Canadian interests in Turkey. And by the way, Turkey remains a market of special interest, both under current government as well as during the time of Stephen Harper's conservative federal government. So the government has been extremely supportive. Our High Commissioner in Ankara, as well as our Consul General in Istanbul, has been quite regularly reaching out to us at Brampton Board of Trade, seeking help in terms of engaging business community to visit Turkey and explore opportunities. So from the private sector side, I think Canada-Turkey Business Council can play a very supportive role.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just be try to be as brief as I can. We did continue our work with the Airport Workers Council. Specifically, we are looking to gain some sort of intervener status in the review of the Canada Labour Code. In Ottawa, we think that's going to be increasingly important. The code needs to be updated. We have some loopholes which allow contract flipping at airports, which is something that's happening across Canada that we've been a major issue facing. We're also trying to push for a federal minimum wage, especially given in Ontario, with the recent election, that we suspect that Bill 148 will be rolled back significantly, probably in the first 18 months of the mandate. So that's going to be some hard slugging. With the Airport Workers Council and transit, I think there's a couple issues that I think we can really update people on. We did a series of trainings in April and May, with airport leaders in the rank and file. And part of that training involved a visioning exercise of what a worker-friendly transit hub would look like and what kind of things we would want to see in the hub. And there was some really creative thinking that went into that. Of course, we've always thought that the hub needs a 24/7 hub. It needs daycare. There's also a call for a liquor store. and that actually Lori's been helping explore these issues with us as well. So those was an interesting thing. A lot of workers, believe it or not, don't even realize that there is a hub being planned still. The GTA doesn't employ all 50,000 workers. So getting that message out to all those companies, 300 employers, to have those conversations with workers takes some time. And the GTA is slowly helping us with that. But a couple of things that arose from that training, and we've already done some activism and started circulating petitions with airport workers, as we're really calling for the transit hub and the existing transit services into Pearson to actually become 24/7. So we started a campaign to lobby for the UP Express to run 24 hours. That's something that we advocated strongly, to have that ridiculous fee knocked back when the UP Express opened. And that was, I think, successful. And now there are workers to take it, and we'd like to see that to be a 24
our service. So that's one thing we're lobbying for. The second thing that we're petitioning for and hoping the GTA will help us is to start negotiating with Metrolinx for bulk passes. What that would mean is union employees, to start off with, would negotiate with employers to have as a benefit a monthly transit pass given to them or deeply discounted. And the only way that works really for employers is if they use their bulk purchasing power to go to TTTC or Metrolinx and purchase a discounted monthly pass with that 20,000, 30,000 workers. You can imagine what the conversation would be. And there's models for this already in the airport. A couple employers do have this benefit. And the hotel workers in downtown Toronto, for example, have had it for almost 20 years because they can't park downtown, even though they come from Mississauga. So there's precedence for it. So those are a couple things that we're really trying to push for, because if you do want workers out of their cars, you're going to have to give them some subsidized passes as another incentive. And, of course, the main concern for workers with the subs construction is, given that it's going to be taking place over their parking lot, is where are they going to park? Because they don't want to have a temporary parking lot in Barrie as this thing is being built. So that's another thing that we're keeping our eyes on as this hub develops.
That's interesting. Number of employees, private company to come into but it's a space.
There is a gym
there
already.
There is. Good Life's
airport.
In the terminal.
Yeah.
Is there
a
Good Life in the terminal? Yeah.
Yeah. But there's no daycare? Yeah. There's complications with daycare. It's not so much having the daycare service. It's having a daycare for 24/7.
Yeah.
Right.
For the city of Brampton, they did it for
it's a great idea. Provincial planning rules don't actually allow it. And it's the land use rules related to the impact that aircraft noise have. So sensitive land uses within certain zones around the airport. So it's no daycares, no residential development. Yeah. So exempt would be a hotel, but.
Because you want to have something, that's positive and motivates you.
Yeah. For a night daycare is one should be maybe called night care, not daycare, which is a lot of workers have issues with who work nights. So we're trying to see if there's a way to get an exemption for night care because the noise isn't as great because there aren't as many events for takeoffs. But we don't know. That would take a champion, I think, at the federal level. So we don't work on it.
And Metrolinx did change the hours of operations recently. They did expand. Little bit,
yeah.
But I think you're absolutely right. I think we hear the stories of workers who just they can't get here in time given the time it starts and the time their shift starts.
And it's not just UP Express; it's all the services.
Yeah. Hema, anything from Councillor Crisanti's office?
So, as everybody knows, we're going to be having municipal elections in the fall, and the councillor has a lot of development plans that are underway currently, and he'd like to see them come through. So he will be running again in the municipal elections in October. Some of the developments that have been underway recently, as a lot of you may know, is the casino, Woodbine Casino, and the Woodbine Mall expansion. So, the gaming expansion. So that's, been approved by council, and that's underway. About 40% of the employment within that expansion is going to be coming from North Etobicoke, Ward 1, Ward 2 area, because we do see a lot of unemployment, specifically concentrated in those areas. So that's one of the positive impacts on our communities. We have the Finch LRT, which everybody's familiar with, that's coming through there as well, and we have the expansion of the Etobicoke General Hospital. So the councillor is advocating for also a redevelopment and revitalization of a lot of our, areas that have subsidized housing, such as our Thistletown areas, Jamestown. Those are all going into a capital plan to have revitalization. So, you know, that plan is underway as well. And in order for him to see the success of that, you know, he would like to run again in the elections to make sure that he sees that implemented. A lot of our development currently for the next 4 years also has to do with revitalization of our parks, our recreational activities for the children in our communities. A lot of our residents have been talking specifically about, you know, how our parks are very, you know, they're not updated, and a lot of our recreational centers, such as the Thistletown Multi-Service Center, it's quite old, so we're looking into revitalizing those as well, and the capital plan has been approved through council to ensure that takes place. So we're excited about that. And one of the key things is our Environment Day that's happening on Saturday, so thank you to GTA for partnering in our event, and we'll see your community outreach team.
Always a fun day. Jane, anything else from you?
I don't have any comments now.
Your work is done. Heather, anything?
Yes, I have just a few points. So one, just to echo or emphasize that I would encourage attendance to those CTA consultations that are taking place across the country, because it's very important that you provide your feedback on the passenger bill of rights. So absolutely, yeah, it's I can send the links. So that's number one. Number two, interesting enough, we are going to be hosting a webinar in the fall in consultation with Global Affairs with a focus on cannabis and that and the transport of across the country that just because it's legalized, guess what? a lot of people just have this a belief that it's legal, so now I can travel with it. And so we're going to be hosting a webinar for our members, but of course that's the message to pass on to the to the travelers that, yeah, just because it's legal.
And which government department are you partnering with?
Global Affairs.
Global Affairs, okay.
Yeah. Another with respect to government, provincial government. So now that the election is over, we can get back on track with the drafting of the regulations for the Travel Industry Act. So that was put on hold, and very soon we'll be back to drafting those regulations as well, because they're eager to. Since Bill 166 passed, and so they're eager to get that in for the end of the year. Last is actually, as I was heading out the door, I had, actually I think this came from, it was our president that said, I was here late one night and received a phone call from an elderly gentleman from the UK. And he had some complaints about our in his words, I guess, the national airport, Toronto.
Yeah, that's us.
And he was very challenged coming through, I think more so from what I understand on a technical standpoint. So I am just sharing this complaint that I think that there's a fine line we all want. We talked about AI tonight, and I mean, it's great that we want to stay ahead of the curve when it comes to technology. But it can be very challenging for those that are intimidated by technology. And so I guess the problem in this particular gentleman's case was he couldn't get access to any sort of personnel on the ground. When I had mentioned to some colleagues that, you know, that there's the white phones are around that you can, and the look even around my own peers were like, what are you talking about? That there's, you know, so I think there still seems to be some awareness needed that you walk into the airport and there's help if you're lost.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, we're using technology more and more, and it's, you know, some people adapt and adopt it more quickly. And we found, I mean, it may have been the new kiosks that have been installed for Canada Customs, primary inspection kiosks. So they work a little bit differently than the old ones do. We've actually had to retain a significant number of staff to be on the ground to help support the introduction, to help people just
yes.
like, you know, and whether it's, you know, elderly and maybe not as, you know, easy to adapt to new technologies, or if it's a language issue,
right?
People don't travel all the time. So there's no question that people need people. And so having boots on the ground to actually support the use of new technology is really important.
And, watch out for the blue vests, right?
That's right. Those are our
OSRs. So I think that needs to be, if that in and of itself can be a message. Yeah.
And there are phones.
And they're phones.
But I would hope they get a live person in their face as opposed to having to find a phone.
It's the problem with CIBC right now. I watch the banks because they put in a whole bunch of pilot in a lot of their branches. They call it the ghost branches. And they're moving employees to other branches that have not been changed, but they shut the bank down for a week, are removing all the tellers, and there's only one person in the bank. People to ask questions, and they haven't kept their people knowledgeable, and it's a nightmare. So the seniors are all complaining about CIBC at this point right now. And I just wanted to mention one.
Okay, we're just getting long in our hours here. We're starting to lose people.
I forgot to mention that Mrs. Saga with the Sheridan and also Navdeep Bains has created a digital media zone. The same as Ryerson downtown. They're well on their way. Apparently, there was a bunch of IT president CEOs looking at this, and with the RIC Center just this week. So we're going to have a new digital media zone in Mississauga.
All right, Province of Ontario. Paul, anything going on in the province these days? Who's our Minister of Transportation? I already asked you that.
No comment. I'll talk to you in September.
Anything from Brampton Economic Development? I still love your title, expert.
Thank you. It is a fun position for sure. Just a quick update. I think the last time I was here, I let everybody know about the work we were doing with the world-renowned planner, Larry Beasley, on the Brampton 2040 vision. So that's been adopted by council. And tomorrow is another groundbreaking day for City of Brampton. We're hoping that council will be approving, and I'm stepping on some toes here because Bedar from Brampton Board of Trade already mentioned this, but tomorrow's the big day when council hopefully will approve the first ever Brampton Economic Development Master Plan. So that's an amazing move for us in the right direction, and that's sort of all part of the implementation of the Brampton 2040 vision. As well, within the next couple of weeks, we will be receiving another presentation before council on the cultural master plan. Again, a first for the city as well. So again, that's another step in the right direction for the Brampton 2040 vision. Bedar already mentioned this as well in his speech there about Ryerson coming to Brampton as well. So we're expecting a new Ryerson campus in downtown Brampton by 2022. So we're looking at all sorts of linkages and connections, obviously, with transit and just partnerships that we will get to make with the development of that new campus in the downtown. So loads of activity going on right now in Brampton, and I think for the next meeting, I would like to just mention as well, we have some of my colleagues in the Economic Development Department who would like to either be part of the agenda or maybe as a delegation to make a presentation on some of the activity that's going on around the Economic Development Master Plan and that kind of thing. So I don't know if this is the right venue to ask for that, but I know my colleague Denise McClure has been in contact with you before, Lori, so she'll probably reach out to you as well.
We'd love to get a conversation.
Yeah, okay, great.
Perfect. All right, Dave, anything from Nav Canada?
Sure, if I could just take 30 minutes of your time. Nothing for me, thanks.
You're going to be lynched. Ludwig from Transport Canada.
Yeah, just a few things really quickly, and I'll speak really fast so we can get through this. Heather, the C49 consultations, I tried my darndest on this old technology, BlackBerry, to locate them, and I can't for you, but I'm sure they're on the website somewhere.
Oh, yes, yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Jan, the red tape reduction at Transport Canada is very active, so we're going through a lot of reductions in legislative that is old and ancient and antique.
Not the health and safety things that we need.
But even just to give you a heads up in terms of right tape.
We're laughing about telex.
Our RTPC, Laurie, I think you've spoken very well about some of the high level and the working level discussions that are going on. It's significant. There's a lot of partnership going on. It answers the motion that has been put forward by Steve. So there is a lot happening in that area. In terms of goods movement, Sabir has hit the nail on the head. There's an active partnership between Transport Canada and Peel Region. It's been recognized that there's some really good things happening there, led by Sabir and his team over there, from e-commerce to the Smart Freight Center. In terms of free trade zones, we in the regional office are quite actively involved, sitting with ISED, I-S-E-D, on some of the asks that are being made by Niagara Region. So I've heard today there needs to be a connectivity into the RTPC. I will take that back to that officer and have it forward. That's the reason we are here as resource to the consultative committee. We're listening to and we're taking things forward from there. The last thing I want to talk about, and it's something that I'm quite passionate about, and so is Laurie and so is this young lady behind me, and that is the Southern Ontario Airports Network. We continue to play a very big role in that and trying to move the yardsticks on that. I commend the GTAA for the leadership they have shown to date. And we have a meeting scheduled for the end of July, just to give you a heads up. I think it's July 27, 26, 27. I remember that day because it's a really good group that comes together. It's 10 regional airports with the GTA trying to ensure that when we do hit peak capacity in 2037, at the GTA to handle all the traffic, air as well as passengers as well as goods, we have somewhere else to put it, if not starting tomorrow, by great ground connectivity to regional airports in Kitchener-Waterloo, in Hamilton, and wherever it may be across the GTA that those 10 airports exist. So this is really good work. Stop.
Awesome. Thanks, Ludwig. I only have one update to share, and then we'll get out of here. So wanted to just let everyone know, if you hadn't seen already, this morning we launched a 18-month pilot with transportation network companies, so Uber and Lyft. Currently, the premium products for Uber and Lyft have been able to operate at the airport, but the other suite of their products have not, like the Uber X's of the world. So we have an 18-month pilot that kicked off. We're obviously working very closely with the existing operators here to monitor and make sure. I mean, there's 200 other airports in North America that already have Uber and Lyft operating. Mississauga's in the middle of a pilot that ends in December. Toronto's already brought it in. Brampton's talking about it. The reaction today from passengers has been extremely positive. We have thousands of people who stand on our curbs every day trying to get an Uber or a Lyft and can't because they're not permitted here. So over the next 18 months, we'll work through that pilot and be able to have feedback and, again, keep in touch with our industry of current operators to make sure that it's working well for them as well.
It launched today?
It launched today at 6 a.m. So, all right, motion to adjourn.
One question?
Yes.
Is there any consideration being given by GTAA to autonomous small bus connection between the terminals?
Well, we have the link train that goes between the two terminals.
I'm just asking. I don't know. I'm just a question.
It
nothing
is,
more than
it,
just
we
information.
Have it. It's a people-less train that's on a cable system.
Fantastic.
So it's kind of autonomous, right?
Autonomous,
you press a button
yeah.
like an elevator. Yeah. It comes after hours, and otherwise it runs on a scheduled service.
Right. I think this is the way some of the airports are going around the world,
sure.
too. Frankfurt
yep.
connects
yep.
three airports through autonomous
yeah,
bus.
Yeah, one of the things Nelson didn't talk about, but the movement of people around the whole airport area is going to be key, and so all sorts of moving sidewalks, types of horizontal moving systems is going to have to be in place.
Big way of addressing the labor yeah. issue.
All right, you're keeping it there. Motion to adjourn, Jonathan, Stephen, all those in favor? All right, thanks everybody. Yeah.
But it went well.
It did. It did.
We're all going to be burned out.